Ira Cohn, who will be up here in a moment, is making his second appearance in St. Louis. He comes to us most recently from New York, having come into New York from Geneva. He is a somewhat legendary poet, photographer, filmmaker, and performance artist. There is some hagiography that goes along with Ira. He was born to deaf parents, and it's said that he learned to spell on his fingers when he was 1 year old. And he'll verify that, I'm sure. In 1964, his travels took him to Tangier. He actually lived in Tangier for some 5 years. And while there, he edited and published a magazine called Ganawa, which featured William Burroughs, Brian Giesen, and others. From 1966 to 70, Ira founded and developed the Universal Mutant Repertory Company and became known as the father of Mylar photography. So you may be familiar with some of his images. One very famous image of Jimi Hendrix photographed in bendable Mylar colored mirrors. He's done photography exhibits all over the world. Many record and CD jackets have featured his photographs, many magazines. Most recently, River Styx, our double issue. We have a front and back cover by Ira Cohn. The Corpse, also formerly known as Exquisite Corpse, the current issue features one of Ira's photographs as a cover. Ira will tell you he's not a photographer. I mean, he's not a technician. And I think that's relevant to bear in mind because it always works. Ira is a magician. He makes wonderful things happen. I'm not, you know, I'm serious. But his photography is really top of the line. In 66, he brought out the Hashish Cookbook under the name Panama Rose. And he also produced Jalala, a recording of Moroccan trance music. So you can see the range of pies he's got his fingers in. In the late 60s, he also published the prose piece The Goblet of Dreams for Playboy magazine. In 1968, he directed and starred in an award-winning independent film called The Invasion of Thunderbolt Pagoda, and he also produced another film called Paradise Now in America, a film of the Living Theater, which some of you may be familiar with, Julian Beck's really legendary, revolutionary theater troupe, whom Ira was very close to. He did a film about them. He spent most of the 1970s in India and Nepal, where he lived for close to 10 years. And he was active there developing the Star Streams poetry series, publishing on rice paper editions poets like Gregory Corso, Charles Henry Ford, Angus MacLeese, and Paul Bowles, as well as his own books of poetry, Poems from the Cosmic Crypt, Seven Marbles, and Gilded Splinters. The decade of the 80s and 90s have mainly been spent in New York, involved in a flurry of projects in literature and the visual arts. These have included photography exhibits, a video documentary of rare footage of the Kumbh Mela, the great festival of holy men that takes place in India every 12 years on the banks of the Ganges. He served also as a contributing editor, a kind of informal catalyst to quite a number of magazines and publishing enterprises. In 1994, his photo essay, Minbad Sinbad, which covered in Ira's inimitable way the Paul Bowles group in Tangier, was featured in River Styx 38. He continues his busy pace of photo exhibits and poetry readings in around and about. This past year, has included readings in Paris, Brussels, Prague, Dublin, Portland, Oregon, and the Mandalay Poetry Festival in Texas. And in December, he'll be reading at Lincoln Center in New York. Most recent books of poetry include The Stauffenberg Cycle and Other Poems, The Dream of Petra Vogt, and On Feet of Gold, which I think is the most recent one. He also, in 1994, produced a CD called The Majun Traveler, which I think there are a few copies available for sale after the reading, which has got wonderful sound, dubs of musicians like Ornette Coleman and Moroccan trance music and Ira Reading. I could go on, and this is an awfully long introduction, but Ira Cohen merits, I think we need to know who Ira is for those of you who don't. It's great to have him here at Dufson in St. Louis. He will be here through the end of the week, and we'll be reading at University of Missouri St. Louis on Thursday at 4 o'clock. What room is that, Howard? Lucas 204, if you want to tell your friends who might enjoy it. Okay, so please give a warm St. Louis welcome to Ira Cohen.
Hello. I, too, would like to know who Ira Cohen is. As the son of deaf mutes, I cry out, demanding the right in the name of tongues quelled by history. Yet I would learn to be silent as if it were my prerogative, silent as the song of a man who cannot speak, songless as a man who could never hear. Imagine Jean Cocteau in the lobby holding a torch. Imagine a trained dog act, a rock and roll band. Imagine I am Curly of the Three Stooges, disguised as William Shakespeare. Imagine that I am the cousin of the mayor of New York or the king of Nepal. I didn't say Napoleon. Imagine what it is like to be in the glare of hot lights when you are longing for dark corners. Imagine the ghost patrol, the tribal orchestra. Imagine an elephant playing a harmonica, or someone weighing out bones on the edge of the desert in Afghanistan. Imagine that these poems are recorded moments of temporary sanity. Imagine that the clock was just turned back or forwards 100 years instead of an hour. Let us pretend that we have no place to go, that we are here in the cosmic hotel, that our bags are packed, and that we have 1 hour to checkout time. Imagine whatever you will, but know that it is not imagination, but experience which makes poetry, and that behind every image, behind every word, there is something I am trying to tell you, something that really happened. This is real timing. 1 second before the planet blows up, I find the words to speak to you. The less light, the more beautiful the mask. Through her fingers, the mask maker takes and gives back our faces. The bandages fall off. We leave our traces. I was balanced in the foundry and wanted to be made. I was found in the balance and made wanting. I have been bound to the valence and wanting weighed. In the time of change, we will become even more strange. Magnetic lines of force attract and repel while we spiral around the sun, trifling with psychic gravity, await the asteroid, the return of Icarus to the sea. The black wave is upon us, O God. Your corona is shivering with light. The flying mountain shocks the seed from its husk. Our mind yawns open as the plume rends concrete, and we enter silently, sure-footed as Indians, propping up the jaws of sleeping crocodiles. It is ours at last, the lava beds, the forests of pure carbon. This is a poem I wrote yesterday. It's for Michael and Adelia. Today is Rosh Hashanah, the day of the Jewish New Year. It happened by chance that on a mulching expedition with Michael Castro and Adelia, I discovered that light was buried in a Jewish cemetery here in St. Louis, not too far from Kidder. Of course, everyone was there, Cohens all over the place, and Bravermans, Rothmans, Schwartz and Ginsburg, too. As if to prove the poem, we went among the gravestones in search of light, where I photographed my friends together in the green. I have seen light in the graveyard before, even at night, but something made me beware of Kidder. I think it was there I lost my glasses. Nothing can reach me now unless I find my true heart's vision, walk straight into the sunlight. Hello, Sam. Hello, Minnie. Coming from the desert, we bring you stones. This is called Can Writing Bring It Back? Can writing bring it back? The Xerox place creates amnesia. For the third time in the last 2 months, I've left my bag somewhere. Now waiting until the Xerox place across the street opens on this Sunday morning to see if it is there like the last time. Another weird, exhausting night with Gerard here as he was before when I luckily recovered it. My notebook with the Kenneth Anger sequence from Texas, the recent meditation at La Casita, the particularly good piece on Purgatorio. Purgatorio is locked up at night, and Beatrice and Ramesses agree that Calvin Klein will never cut it, that paradise can only be temporary, that mythologies of the heart is meat, not lingerie. But this piece I read to Gerard's answering machine, and he copied it onto another tape, which makes it retrievable even if the bag is not. Poetry may be next to prophecy, but also I know that life is next to death, that sanity lives next door to insanity. Timothy calls to find out whether I have gotten to the Xerox store, but it doesn't open till 10. He tells me of Hemingway's suitcase of manuscripts left by his wife at the train station, about a lost signac between two cardboards, about Karen's notebook left on a train in Europe, the pink pages of his novel at the garbage dump near a train station in Spain, some of which he recovered and saw published in Signal by Brett Romer. Gerard found a camera bag he left behind at Veselka's, and K.J. Clark threw out an expensive camera Gerard had hidden in an otherwise empty garbage bag. Jane Bowles left manuscripts in taxicabs, and T.E. Lawrence rewrote Seven Pillars of Wisdom after losing the complete manuscript. And Antonin Artaud, did he go mad after losing his magical cane? What falls to my lot falls to me. What falls to your lot falls to thee. On a rickshaw in Calcutta, Klaus argued about the few rupees and left behind a bag with $25,000 in cash. None of us will get out alive, and yet Buck still in the hole has lost more than I will ever have. The miracle is in what one still has or in what one has given away. Radio waves bouncing around in the void, the recycled thought in Akasha, the dust of an unborn star, twinkling feebly in the future. My father dreamed of losing something in the subway as he was dying. And God, did he ever dream he could lose a galaxy? Could a universe be misplaced, forgotten while standing in line at the post office? It's 5 to 10 and I have to go. And I was halfway up Purgatorio when it happened, industriously hanging on the ledge of sloth. And a man goes by in a wheelchair with no legs. So it wasn't there, and nobody knows anything, and I'm a laughingstock, and I can't go anywhere without risking my life or what's left of it, and I have no rightful place. And what do I expect, that the shoemaker's elves are going to arrive at the door of my life and rescue me, protect me, or my word, my very heartbeat, save it for future generations? Amazing to imagine the significance of Lascaux, or a single sigh petrified as a wrinkle in time, and another egg opens, and another thing crawls out, finely tuned and programmed for death, which is life, or could one reverse it all and sleep at last in the yoke of peace? Kenneth Anger taking Jack Smith to all the second-hand shops in San Francisco looking for a Morning Glory phonograph and settling for a plastic space gun, which he paid $1.50 for when Jack asked the storekeeper if he would take 25 cents. Samson is dead, and Ginger Rogers too. It is hailing in Dallas, and I am reading my poems under a tent. It is as if the very drummers of heaven are accompanying my songs, and still I am standing in the ashes of my ardor, unable to withstand the silence. What will I use for a shoulder bag? You think it's funny, and maybe you're right. Take care of my kids and fuck my wife. I may not be gone, but it sure feels like I'm on my way, as Gerard speaks of buying a vacuum cleaner, and I hold on to the only handle I know, but the bag has vanished into thin air. Is it only the presence of a common enemy that makes us unite? How about the uncommon aspiration, the desire to climb over these walls, to see what's out there? Only in that way can we discover what's in here, as if hidden, so hard it is to know, to blur the distinction between yours and mine, a notion more sublime. Another note in a bottle, an arrow fallen from the sky, reaching no one in particular, another do and die. Whatever truly dies stays dead forever, except the spirit live and redeem the spark. This I saw in the luminous glass. Take away all from me that I may stand tall as the flame which ignites the dark of the dark to come. Surrender me not to the formless and unusable worlds of the incomplete, but candle me in the hope of eternal return, as if in a magical tale of my own telling, it will be so. I was okay before when I was inching my way as a worm. Now I'll even buy a ticket if I have to. Straighten thy legs. Rise up, brother. It is I who call you to your better self. This is a poem for Jimi Hendrix, which I wrote on the 10th anniversary of his death. And since this is the 25th of his anniversary coming up this year, I thought I would read this poem to you tonight. Immortal Idol. Amen. When you put on your coat and started down the stairs, how I thought, no, he can't leave like that. Then you turn the mirror's corner, walking into cool drifts of absolute reverie. Oh, poet of the averted glance and the steel string, seeking your own image in the butterfly wing of sleep. An empty airplane falls in flames, and you, game for any fling, rise above the living by virtue of your sound, which is everlasting. Of all the dead singers, you are the most alive, and after all these years, you are still running in the gold. Jimmy, you were a prince of sadness, and bowed your head to her who loved something more than you, yet she followed too, as all follow your lead. Amen. For Lakshmi and Andre, bright penny meditation or Frankenstein in the park. sitting with Mr. Baum, taking the November sun in Central Park, our backs against the slanted windows of the Metropolitan Museum, where smart sunbathers come and sit out of sight behind the gently sloping knoll, not so far from where Jennifer Levin was strangled by that shitheel. White West Highland Terriers look out in a perfect triangle like temple dogs in China or Nepal. You wouldn't ever know that the cancer is slowly spreading, that a few cans of tuna are not enough to save the day. We don't know where the girl is. She was an artist who tried to kill herself, put a gun in her mouth, and blew away both of her eyes. She too surviving to this day. You'd never know that even the sun will not shine forever. Can we take consolation in some distant sun or star, some parallel universe which just is in its own way, not better or worse? A play with or without an audience still plays while we lay our snares. The other day, Karen called to ask me Frankenstein's first name. She had a bet, and then I said, Victor. But today I thought, Timothy, Alfred, Gregory, Andre Frankenstein indeed, Ira, Raphael, Lakshmi, Faye, even David Frankenstein. And then I began to laugh inside, and when the laughter subsided, I saw the joke and the power of the name and what power it holds over all that cries, that lives or dies inside. I am what I am, Popeye said. And in this, man, perhaps for a moment, touches God. Everyone assumes that Frankenstein is the name of the monster. But there is no monster, only the myth of a maker who no longer exists. This is called Coconut Economics. Don't say thanks to the old campaigner, let him fall on his retainer. One of the great secrets I learned in India, the secret of spiritual economics in a nutshell, you might say, at the entrance to the temple, someone sits selling a coconut, which is bought by the pilgrim and offered to the presiding deity. Then even before the pilgrim is gone, the coconut is returned to the temple gate where it is sold again. This is the story of how one coconut, never opened, can support a temple for 1,000 years. Meanwhile, today, world leaders of the 7 most powerful industrial economies are doing their utmost to bring global trade negotiations to a successful conclusion by the end of the century, and the only thing being shared is the blame. See New York Times, November 7th, 92, for fortune cookies going east to China, where they are still unknown. This is called an economic beachhead in a land of more than 1 billion cookie-eating people. But where's the temple? The time of the werewolf. Remember Yugoslavia, yes. Remember Yugoslavia, how can we forget it, now that we know what little we know, which is too much for the human heart to contain? Again, man's brutality to man, ethnic cleansing, the rape of Bosnia, and the children, always the children. Once proud partisans filled the mountain strongholds with good reason to resist the Nazi avalanche. Then too, the Serbs and Croats, like the Hindus and Muslims in India, turned each other over to the bloodlists of history. Yugoslavia, what does it mean? A yoking of slaves to pull a national plow? Was it a kind of utopian dream of fellowship? I think of Fortress Europe, the Archduke Ferdinand, the ghost of the machine unleashed for death. The flame flickers in the black volcano of Germany, and the dead come and sing every night. Through steel walls you can hear them. Sarajevo, the trigger point, the excuse for the Anschluss. Because it is the end of history, they incorporate in themselves the nostalgia, the melange of word image and iconoclasm, the full-blown flower of a genetic hate, endemic, psychic, etc. Yet even now the room is full of Yugoslavians who are not infected with this madness. Why not kill your neighbor over a cow? Why not kill last year's wedding guests, school friends, former lovers? Bomb it flat, grass it over, and put the cows out. A non-solution for an insoluble situation. 10,000 people are dying daily in Angola. I can't even speak about Cambodia, Mozambique, Burma and the Sudan, Somalia, Florida, El Salvador, and the Bronx, Iraq and Ireland. The Chinese medical program in Tibet, automatic sterilization of young girls. These are just the physical things. On to the metaphysical, the failure of those in power to do anything, the lack of will. Is this the end of history? The end of the Joycean cycle? All we have left for the American psyche within this empty circle is Oldenburg's tilted bottle of empty words. Remember Joseph Beuys's coyote pissing on the Wall Street Journal? Can you hear the famous whimper? This is the non-howl, the final stormtroopers of our psyche. In the eyes of humanity, the look of someone who has been tied to a chair by a convicted killer turned loose. Deutschmark, Uber alles. The artist, like a dog, howls before the earthquake. It was the Deutschmark buffer zones which took down the walls from Tangier to Trieste, from the Oder-Neisse to Orly Airport. Economic political power is only another extension of war. Give them beer and football as the Romans gave them bread and circuses. The only great art is that which has not been created yet. There is a man whose job it is to burn old money, £2 million in a day. He keeps the ashes in ice bags and takes them home to line his walls. To be the richest man in the world, James says, you have to cremate yourself and join the ice bags of burnt money on the shelf. I quote Anatole Stern's Europa, 1927. Eternity and nothingness, two fattened boxers who will always win. We who wolf down meat every day. We who breathe sulfur like air. We who drag along the streets our powerless fists, stuffing our pockets. We shall lose, lose, lose as always. Insurrectionaries, arise. Here's a recent poem from Geneva called Gold and Ivory. It seems as if Borges is buried here in Geneva. Perhaps I will pay him a visit. My phantom covers you as you lie on your back, a ray of ash, a black oil, a deer dying of whiteness. I have stolen the world's beauty and offer it as I would a trinket, found in a bazaar, casually as if it were an everyday thing. To travel through time, to recover spring, to say I love you. I take your photo between two panes of etched glass covered in raindrops. I contemplate a poem to be published by a clandestine press in wartime. You hand me false papers which will get me across the border. Naked in pink socks, carrying a blue umbrella, I step into the sea with the secret manuscripts of our common revelation. Did you see how naturally the sparrow came to eat from your hand? Insomnia on Duke Ellington Boulevard, that's where I live, in New York, July 14th, breakfast with myself at the Olympia Diner, 106th Street in Broadway. Fell asleep around 4 a.m. with the TV on. Van Heflin and Barbara Stanwyck enter my disturbed sleep. Sometimes the only way out is to die, but happily someone else escapes, takes to the road, goes on traveling. I'm up at 7, go to the post office, send two Cuban alligators to Brussels, then read Gabriel's column in Newsday about the real meaning of the closet. Feel nauseous, order a hard-boiled egg, which comes without a shell, mashed in a cup. Is my heart, too, yearning for its dying hour? Please bring me one order of cool snow. Here I do not recognize anyone. What am I to you? Yet the door keeps opening, There is an endless stream. Even if I know how to walk alone, should my tongue cry out in warning to my shadow torn from its moorings? My grasp has exceeded itself. I refuse to be you or any other. The phone is ringing in an empty room. The rains have already come, but the smile of the beggar means little to me as I watch the parade pass the window. No one recognizes their own reflection. Each one flees with reversed feet, as if by escaping life, death discovers what we always knew. We are more than dust and less than dew. My feelings are unsettled. I feel sick and unsatisfied. I want to write a poem or have sex or go to the North Pole with a special friend, someone like you. Didn't we share a dream? Weren't we always willing to come through for each other at any cost, even to this day? When does the tundra bloom? Once a year, once in a lifetime? Around my neck, the Hatha jewelry, two perfect cobras in a single root, Lakshmi and Narayan, the two in one. I have nothing to write about, so I propose as a joke to write a poem on my toenail. It should be in French, Mademoiselle Angle de Pousse de Pied. You grow secretly in the night like my desires and continue to grow, even in death, sharp and strangely angled, completely ridiculous. You ask for it, stick your neck out for cutting, like my yearnings in broad daylight. Hopefully we are coming to the end of a hot spell, while the Midwest continues to be inundated with floods. Notes written by a poet who is awake are not worth much. Cocteau from Opium. I meet a priestess from Atlantis in the Museum of Natural History who sells me a crystal which, having been heated with gold at a high temperature, developed an aqua aura. Naturally, we meet looking at the mineral collection. I remember the bright orange sapphire from Ceylon and a house made of mastodon bones. Let's go to El Morocco. If I could remember just a fraction of what I said on the telephone, if he could take his clothes off and sit on the banks of the Ganga, if she could see the profile of Caliban in the smoke over the oil fields, if we could just take off and go to Madagascar, if they would stop killing each other and wake up tomorrow morning with a new vision, I would stick my head in a printing press and you could read tomorrow's paper today. Extra, extra, read all about it. Poets' brains prove to be useful. P.S. Sometimes when I pick up my pen, it leaks gold all over the tablecloth. Okay, Kathmandu. I lived there for many years. This is something called Kathmandu Dream Piece. Trying to describe Kathmandu is like making a cross-section of sky and clouds, indefinable as the mysterious blue which hovers above our ancient memories, ever-changing as the cloud forms advancing over the valley. Dreams of dragon claws dissolving like sugar in the oracular waters of oriental wisdom, only to reform in great mushrooms of future holocaust. Endless cycles of death and rebirth figure everywhere in the storied pagodas, statues of gods encrusted with orange puja powder or brass figures shining like mirrors from the million hands which do daily homage to the cosmic spirit. There where the common greeting is namaste, I bow down to the god which is in you. Where the dawn comes up over the peaks of crystal and ice, hastened by the sound of bells ringing everywhere. And the great turning wheels of the Tibetans keep constant rain over the balance of an errant planet, where even the most humble carrier in rags walking over the icy moraines demonstrates that true dignity is born of poverty and can never die under an unlittered sky. I remember ripped prayer flags flying in the mountain wind, and suddenly there was snow. I remember nights full of candles burning on every doorstep and roof ledge, and then the stones, every one of which has its own history, nor is there any flower without its place in the garland of giving. If you spend any time in Kathmandu, you will see a man wearing a brown overcoat, whatever the season, whose fingers are covered with cheap glittering rings, and who carries a rolled-up newspaper out of which he will give you a picture of Krishna playing his flute, or Durga with a necklace of human skulls riding resplendently on a lion. Or it may be Shiva, lord of beasts, sitting in meditation on a tiger skin, not unlike the sadhus who come to worship at the shrines of Pashupatinath as part of their never-ending pilgrimage. On the back of the picture, he has written painstakingly in English his celebration of the day in honor of the god. This will be the global emperor who, when he knew I was leaving for Europe, prepared letters for the political leaders of the West, advising them that defense of globe is our main concern. He will be endlessly on his way to the temple, where he will present a fruit to Lord Narayan, hoping that one day the fruit will dissolve there without being taken by monkey or hungry human. For it is only when the untouched fruit dissolves completely that the global emperor will consider that true benefit may accrue to the human race. Then it may be said that the god himself has taken it. I remember I was just walking down the road and across the rice fields where people were working with hoes and pickaxes, all women in a row. The old men together could barely push their load over the bridge, and all the others carrying loads of vegetables or refrigerators on their backs. I was past the road and on top of the hill and the clouds. They were carrying the sky, and we were dreaming of thunder. I remember a detail of melting snow, and at the jeweled edges of brittle ice, a brown faded flower shines golden in the sunlight at the top of a giant profile like a broken nose cresting the horizon. And then the young Nawari girl was married to a tree. I remember pretending to sleep while outside a great slaughter was taking place, a hecatomb of water buffaloes killed by the king's men. And the king's palms, dipped in the blood of sacrifice, printed on a white cloth. I remember being assaulted by hostile radios, hysterical laughter, and a babble of foreign tongues. I remember the blood in the streets, awaiting the last propitious rains, and then the sky full of kites, repenting of such ill-begotten caresses, and I implore the secret heart's rhetoric to spray this night with its golden sheen. In the memory of parchment unrolled and the sound of muffled drums calling us to unspeakable acts there on the shores of some fuming river, solitary and unknown, while pretending to fall asleep over the maps of future possibilities. Imagine all this perfumed with urine, and then another busload of tourists appears as if dropped from the sky with cameras trained on each other as they stand in the marketplace, afraid of the cows and what is hidden within. For them, it is only a stopover, a moment of reality between closing walls of industrial fantasy. But for the one who stays long enough to know the god within, for the one who learns to bow, if only once, for that one, the dream will never die. Song to nothing. And surely we will die without memory, coming to cold in the shadow of space. And if it isn't too late for the star to love you, spraying the sky with whispers attuned to galaxies hungry for flame. And if the tongue of night sings of albino winos till the morning light shafts the doorway, then surely we will die tonight, faceless at the white gate, sharing the smoke with ancient shapes in future garb. And you stand somewhere there on the other side, feeding on the pain of dreamlessness, where from the misty morning of white shadows and the unresisting need to destroy. Samael, Samael, I beg it may be forgiven that they may be driven out of the black into the white. Only let the dazzle remain for gamblers to surprise, the strategic diamond, the throne of compressed bone in the unshored dark where only light can forgive and your mind is signed. Embers of echoes in the vastness disguise the yearning to burn blind eyes in arrogant displays of feeling. Running wild, these beasts will feast on the newborn kind, for surely we will die tonight unless we learn to ignore what the others live for on the other side of morning. And the skin of nothing left by the same summer masks the faceless wanderer. Oh, let it happen, this weird to discover the shape of beauty in everything extreme. For surely we will die tonight, whether we will or whether we dream. Oh, Samael, forgive the dreamer, forgive the dream. The song of nothing is your lullaby. Here's a poem from Tangier. It's called Tangier Telegram from the Majun Traveler. Majun is a confection of hashish that you can eat and whatever. That's the Majun Traveler. Once I had switchboard word of Suleiman to know quick branches, forests of eyelids, herons of bright power. Believe me, opening spirit locks across body, the will to commit heart slide as big as a table. Do not name Bourne Peninsular place. Goodbye to previous actions. For a time I listen, spoken wishes, hollow moment to a rendezvous. Gradually individual atoms scream, washed reflection, refract radiance, moving closer between stars. Blood burst in cloud and the whole house is ready. Make way for luminous candle flicker of mystery's astral cascade. Endow light erection of all things, conscious crenation to know me in the vacuum, new flowing textures to jeweled passages and hydrogen tents, mongrel breath at dawn, eternity has my eyes forever, under unnameable obstacles, I see a world of frozen stillness, hands in balance, seeds left inside self, awake, soaring, become shadow in processions of light and horses. Great shears of light in the skyborn peninsula, my lips, the soul in darkness, doing eyeless vision tricks, moving closer to the stars again. I myself in the dark room, informed with all voices, a stellar shadow falls over plate glass, flames in silver bottles, hallucinatory whispers, it's never bad to kill. The balance of the cosmos lies naked as fakirs stumble towards succession. In the center of colors, the perfect dervish goes through the elaborate ritual, burial alive, Chinese water torture, until consciousness becomes routine on a faded rug, flipping sheets of power above the kingdom of cruelty. Sticking pins through his cheeks and stopping his heart at will. I am this symphony in my temple on hills. I respond to heart's hidden gardens, touch on leafy places. I am the hazard in the form. I see flowering boughs of unknown blood beyond all familiarity. For Petra, running through the streets of Essaouira with a beating heart in her hands. To what fell black-winged majesty does your beauty's shivering glance owe its silver talon and claw? What spider more fantastic came ever down from taut-stringed web to take its prey from realms of endless dreams and streams of airy currents where prisms are set aflame before the dawning day? Oh, say, skull-face gleams with richful lips and rides a spirit steed, which laughing in the wind of time makes mockery of what all mortals fall to need. For having fallen, you fell to know the veil in flames, the blind hearts show. But what in your other hand lies concealed? This gift that I give you, this laughter, this exquisite geometry, these dangling lines, the skulls and wires seen through a glass, the light as it turns out of itself, this scene that will pass, this hand which encircles this flame, this silver dust, this song which will last, this scorpion whip, this silver tip, this play we play, this instant in our hand, this pain in your heart, these lips I understand, this precious beast made of teeth and roses, and you are this play, and this play never ends, and you are this play, and this play never ends, this shadow which neither of us understands, between the days of ecstasy and betrayal. Ten? Okay. Okay, this is a poem I wrote in Benares. A woman coming up the main street from the of the burning ghat on her back with atrophied legs covered in ashes and calling out mantras. On her back, she sweeps the central concourse of Kashi, covered in ashes and pushing her plate in a rattle of zinc. She comes up from the Ganga. Her legs are dead dogs pulled by a string, crooked and tortuous, clothed in foam. She is a drunken wave moaning mantras of rivers as she rolls back the shadows of weddings and pilgrims and erases the names of the founders of the city. Absolving the rickshaws, with one hand she touches the sky. Oh, wingless stump, freak fated to crawl the earth upside down like God's. You lick the offal from the ground. And night, which has concealed the masks of love, breaks on the tongue of morning, bringing rain with the dawn from the tower of prayer and clamors of mirrors awakened from sleep. For the hump of the ox is dissolved with desire, and the beggars flee from the river as the fires of evening yield to the light of your body, shredding the echoes of amber in speed. Yet the shadow of the peacock, unbewildered by candles, still clings to your spirit, hidden from the city. For though you separate the black from the silver, a single obsession holds sway over all. It is annihilation through love to seek the substance we are shadows of. This is a poem called Letter to Caliban. This is my history, New York City, 1995. There are blind spots everywhere. Someone stands. Once people slept in gardens. Now not even photography can get you out of prison. End of a line. Must I read the Science Times to know that the monarch's migration is a fragile journey? With a small amount of human negligence, everything could disappear. My last thought as I finally fell into a fitful sleep, my first thought as I picked up the telephone to get the bad news. Glamour will not save our wintering grounds. Better to stay a caterpillar and munch leaves than to risk all for the dazzling moment of flight and the priceless illusion of freedom, hardly. A butterfly's brain is only the size of a pinhead, yet it knows how to get to Mexico, hitching rides on winds and spiraling columns of warm air. But the end of monarchs as we know them is here. I am learning to stay quietly in this apartment with my mother waiting for Lakshmi. We are dead souls on a cyclical journey. Future tourists will come to marvel at our poems, festooning the gables of a broken civilization. Motels will be named after us, and children will parade in monarch costumes when the season of our return is remembered. Goodbye, elephant. Goodbye, whale. Hello, AIDS virus. Smaller is perhaps stronger after all. My dreams were bigger than any whale, and sometimes I dove even deeper. And for Michael, because you asked me, Shivaratri, 1979. Shivaratri is the night of Shiva. It's a great festival which was being held all over India, but this was in Kathmandu at Pashupatinath. The tongue of the water buffalo is big and covered with straw. This is a big poem full of tourists and cameras set on tripods. This is a poem seen from the bamboo scaffolding of the Golden Temple. A poem with one hand reaching up out of the earth, counting beads on a rosary. This is a poem of lost children looking for money. A poem trying to hold a split bag of rice in a moving crowd. This is a poem burning like the charas in the pipe of a friend. A poem of Shivaratri carried on staggering legs to see the king. This is a poem striving towards the light sparked from the heart of Basudeb. This is a poem which wants to tie itself around your neck like the skinny legs of the old man of the sea. This is a poem interrupted by elephantiasis. This is a poem leaning against a temple wall, drawing energy from the sun. This is a poem smiling with no nose, a poem reluctant to sing, a trident of a poem aimed at your pineal. This is a poem of pilgrimage, an offering of struck bells to a dead dog in the river. This is a poem looking down on pagodas. This is a poem waiting for opium. This is a poem of suicided sadhus surrounded by trees in a foreign land, anonymous as the voice on the loudspeaker. This is an anonymous poem covered with birds. Tokyo Birdhouse for Kazuko Shiraishi. It all started with Kazuko saying, "I want to invite you to my birdhouse." Then I discovered that stamp with her picture on it, the pink leadbeater cockatoo with seven-pointed white crest, sharp little beak, red-rimmed eyes and white wings, sitting in a tree in Okusi Ambino. I knew that I was the brown owl from Cape Verde, doomed to be up all night, longing for live meat, like the wounded owl I once force-fed every day in Kathmandu. Then I couldn't get the birds out of my head. I remembered how writing evolved from the flight of cranes, the calligraphical formations, the bird tracks in the sand, Palamedes and Valmiki. Then Attar's colloquy of the birds started by confounding me. I too wanted to fly into the center of the sun. Then there was the magical kingfisher of my childhood, the crow who flew with burning wick in its beak in order to describe Dharma, that Pondicherry bird of South India, calling all night, "I've got a fever, I've got a fever," the fever bird we called it. I remembered the feather floating to the ground, the brilliant plumage, Quetzalcoatl, your triple-eyed peacock feather, given to an emperor of China by the king of Nepal. This is not a poem, but a pastiche of swallows and toucans, a hymn to flight, a tenderness for pigeons, your woodpecker which lets spirits escape from trees, big birds which can't fly, to the face hidden beneath every wing, to the falcon's lure, to the blinded birds, lyre birds, birds which are good to eat, parrots and magpies, the whip or will, the egg of sleep. I want to invite you to my birdhouse, you said. Okay, one last short poem, if I can find it. I'm almost there. The fourth monsoon. Again, you kissed me with your dorji lips. It was in the lower echelons of the fourth monsoon. I remember when you came, a wild wind rising from the Bay of Bengal. And then you came softly too, blowing like perfume from the Arabian Sea. Then from the high plateaus, you descended so many times in blessing, but today your dorji lips arrive unaware. Out of the fourth monsoon, they brush me. And this is the rain we make ourselves, wooing by magic the electrical connection, as if it were true, as if it were really you.